now, it's part 8 of Jane Austen's Mansfield Park, and Sir Thomas is determined that Fanny will see the error of her ways.
Henry Crawford has proposed to Fanny Price, but Fanny has not forgotten Edmund, and though she knows the impossibility of any future with him, she longs for him to come home to Mansfield Park.
How could Fanny Price refuse a gentleman such as Mr. Crawford?
Indeed, sister,
it is most... To have me asked is extraordinary enough. And for poor Julia to be so snubbed, so insulted. And then for Fanny Price to refuse.
Fanny. There you are. Now, I know I promised my dear husband not to speak to you on this matter, but I had a most agreeable surprise this morning, and I must say... We certainly must be a handsome family to excite a young man of Mr. Crawford's means and position.
Aunt, you cannot wish me to have done differently. You cannot wish me to marry. If you would miss me, I'm quite sure.
Oh, I could do very well without you if you were married to a man of such good estate as Mr. Crawford. And you must be aware, Fanny, that it is every young woman's duty to accept such an exceptional offer as this.
Here we have almost the only piece of advice Fanny has ever received from her aunt. It silences her. Edmund has much to hear on his return from his ordination, not least of which is Henry Crawford's proposal of marriage to Fanny.
Things done well.
That evening finds the entire family, along with Mr. Crawford, gathered together in the drawing room.
You are to be feared. Have you precedent of this commission? I believe not any. We must not rend our subjects from our laws.
My dear Fanny, you must be exhausted.
No, Aunt. I enjoy to read.
You will strain your eyes.
Perhaps I might read to you, Lady Bertram.
Oh, Mr. Crawford. How nice of you to think of offering.
Edmund watches for Fanny's response as Henry Crawford begins to read.
Why we take from every tree lop bark and part of the timber, and though we leave it with a root, thus hacked the air will drink the sap.
Fanny tries not to raise her head from her work, determined to show no interest whatsoever in Henry Crawford's reading.
If ever any malice in your heart were hid against me, now forgive me frankly.
But his reading is too good,
I do not know,
and her pleasure in good reading is extreme.
More than my all is nothing, nor my prayers are not words duly hallowed, nor my wishes more worth than empty vanities, yet prayers and wishes are all I can return.
At last, the eyes which Fanny has used to studiously avoid him throughout the day are fixed on Henry till he senses them and returns her gaze.
Why, Mr. Crawford, that play must be a favourite with you, for you read it so very well.
It will be a favourite of mine, I believe, from this hour.
You have a great turn for acting, Mr. Crawford, and I tell you what, I think you will have a theatre some time or other at your house in Norfolk.
No, that will never be. Your ladyship is quite mistaken.
He looks at Fanny, smiling.
I think my acting days are long behind me.
Later, as Lady Bertram dozes on the sofa, Fanny and Henry Crawford find themselves virtually alone.
You see, Miss Price, I am quite changed. I am happier than I was because I now understand more clearly your opinion of me.
Mr. Crawford.
Let me explain. You think me unsteady. Easily swayed by the whim of the moment, easily tempted. I shall not convince you by telling of the alteration in me. My conduct over time must speak for me. It will prove that as far as you can be deserved by anybody, I do deserve you. You are my superior in all respects, this I know, but I am still not frightened. It is not by a quality of merit that you can be won. That's out of the question. It is he who loves you most devotedly shall have the best return, and by that right I do. And will deserve you.
How long it is since we have ridden together, Fanny?
You have much that occupies you now, Edmund.
All is changed since we were children.
Not all.
Will you not tell me, Fanny, what is on your mind?
I am afraid.
Afraid? Of what?
That we think too differently for me to find any relief in talking of what I feel.
I consider Crawford's proposal most desirable, if you could return his affection.
But I thought you were against me.
This is such a comfort.
But how could you possibly suppose me against you? How could you imagine me an advocate for a marriage without love?
My uncle thought me wrong. Terribly wrong, and I know he has been talking to you. Myself and Mr. Crawford, we are so totally unalike.
But your being unalike, Fanny, does not in the smallest degree count against the probability of your happiness together. Some differences are useful when it comes to matrimonial happiness. One does not wish to have a companion who is in all ways exactly like oneself.
I cannot approve his character. I have not thought well of him from the time of the play. He behaved so very improperly.
Let us not any of us be judged by that time. Maria was wrong, Crawford was wrong. We were all wrong together, and none so wrong as myself.
Perhaps I saw more than you did.
And Miss Crawford, she is very angry with you. But it is only the disappointment of a sister, I think.
I knew she must be angry.
But her heart is made for love and kindness. Your refusal is more than she can understand.
I should have thought that every woman must have felt the possibility of a man's not being approved. Let him have all the perfections in the world, yet it ought not to be set down as certain that a man must be acceptable to every woman he may happen to like himself.
If you do not love him, then nothing can justify your accepting him. But the matter does not end there. Crawford's affection for you is deep. He plans to persevere in the hope of winning your love in the future. Let him succeed at last. You have proved yourself upright and disinterested, and now prove yourself grateful and tender-hearted. And then you will be the perfect model of a woman, which I always believed you to be.
Never, never, never. He will never succeed with me.
Fanny! Fan! Come back! I'm sorry!
Edmund speaks with his father and recommends that no more efforts be made to influence or persuade.
Come in.
Fanny Price, here you are in your own dear room.
Miss Crawford.
I was once only in this room before, do you remember? When I came here to rehearse. And then your cousin Edmund arrived. When two sympathetic hearts meet in the marriage state, matrimony may be called a happy life. I suppose no time can ever wear out the impression I have of his looks and his voice as he said those words. If I had the power of reliving any one week in my life, Miss Price, it should be that week, the acting week.
And saying so, with a degree of tenderness which Fanny has never seen in her before, Mary Crawford weeps.
Good gentle Fan. When I think of this being the last time of seeing you for, I do not know how long, I feel it quite impossible to do anything but love you.
Miss Crawford, I am quite sure all will be well for you in London. You have so many acquaintances.
But I should see no one half so amiable where I am going. Who is to say we shall not be sisters one day? I know we shall. I feel we are born to be connected.
But truly, you are only going from one set of friends to another.
I think only of the friends I am leaving. You have all so much more heart among you than one finds in the world at large. Is it any wonder my brother so much desires to be part of your family? To find a place in your heart?
Miss Crawford.
You must have seen that he was trying to please you by every attention in his power. Was he not devoted to you at the ball? And then before the ball, the necklace.
Do you mean that your brother knew of the necklace beforehand?
Knew of it? It was his own doing entirely.
Had I any idea of it, nothing would have induced me to accept the necklace. As to your brother's behaviour, I had been sensible to it for some little time. Perhaps 2 or 3 weeks, but I put it down as simply being his way. I had not, Miss Crawford, been an inattentive observer of what was passing between him and some parts of this family in the summer and autumn. I was quiet, but I was not blind. I could not but see that Mr. Crawford allowed himself gallantries which meant nothing.
I do not defend him. I leave him entirely to your mercy. But if any man ever loved a woman for ever, I think Henry will do so much for you.
I shall see your cousin in town, I hope. He talks of being there tolerably soon. And the Rushworths and Julia, I'm sure of seeing again and again. I must take my leave. But I long for a happy reunion. I do long for it. At a time when all these troubles are resolved. Goodbye, Miss Price. Dear Fanny, write to me.
In the evening, there is another parting. Henry Crawford sits with the family some time, but is quite unlike his usual self. And Fanny grieves for him in his distress, though hoping she might never see him again till at least he is the husband of some other woman. But with Mr. Crawford gone, it is Sir Thomas's object that he should be missed.
Ah, Fanny. Come in. Come in. We have had some very pleasing news. Your brother William has obtained 10 days' leave of absence.
That is good news, sir.
Indeed, and I have naturally suggested that he come directly to join us here at Mansfield Park.
Thank you, Uncle.
And then I thought that perhaps you should like to accompany him back to Portsmouth.
Portsmouth?
You might both spend a little time with your mother.
Sir, I should dearly love to see my mother again.
Well then, it is settled.
Do you think that she would enjoy such a reunion? Seeing her home again might prove an intolerable shock to the girl.
That is precisely what I envisage. I wish her to be shocked, to be lonely, and to look poverty in the face. What better way to encourage a girl to count her blessings?
Oh, but Sir Thomas Fanny has always been such a good girl. Always so grateful for what we've given her.
And she is about to make the mistake of her life. A brief time to take stock of her situation may be just what she needs to encourage her to see the value in Mr. Henry Crawford.
It is indeed a handsome match. Well, if you're quite sure...
I am.
Fanny? Fan? Oh. Whatever are you doing out here?
Those are the great grey steps I walked up when I first arrived. Do you remember? The drawing room windows with the view of the great oaks, and at the side the long grass where the rabbits hide after they've had their dinner in the kitchen garden. I love this house.
You are not leaving forever, just for a little while?
Perhaps all will be changed in that time.
Go see your mother. When you have done, come back here to your home, Mansfield Park.
I do not know how I shall manage without you.
I shall write, Aunt.
God bless you, Fanny.
Uncle.
Mind that you prove useful to your mother, given that you are so easily distracted from your work.
Aunt.
Fanny, I shall miss you terribly.
I do not want to go.
All will be well. Write to us.
I will.
Goodbye, my dear. Do give my sister our kindest love.
And before long, Mansfield Park is quite out of sight, and ahead of Fanny Price lies once again the open road.
And in part 8 of Jane Austen's Mansfield Park, you heard Felicity Jones as Fanny Price, Benedict Cumberbatch as Edmund Bertram, and Julia McKenzie as Mrs. Norris. Susan Lynch was Mary, James Callis was Henry, Uza Sadavi was Lady Bertram, Tim Pigott-Smith played Sir Thomas Bertram, and Jane Austen's narration was by Amanda Root. It was dramatised by Lynn Coughlin and directed by Sally Evans, and the penultimate part is tomorrow at the same time.